don't know about you, but
my mother was very free with giving out advice, especially to me. And she had certain standard things that she would say and repeat somewhat frequently. One of those was, "You are known by the company you keep." And I know that her intent was a good one. It was to keep me out of bad company. It was to keep me away from people who might lead me into something that I would never think to do myself, or if I thought to do it myself, would not do without their influence. So it was a good thing. Now, there is no record in the Bible that Mary, the mother of Jesus, told him that very same thing. "You are known by the company you keep." But if she did, he routinely ignored it. Today's story is one of those stories. Jesus seemed to have the habit of collecting all the wrong people around him. The wrong people being, as you heard, tax collectors and sinners. Frequently, they were spoken of as tax collectors and prostitutes. So you have your political economic sinner, the tax collector, who conspired with the Romans to essentially rob his own people. And then you had that individual sinner, and yet this woman who is in prostitution may have found herself with no visible means of support, no way to earn a living except to sell the thing that others thought was valuable about her. You know, the church over 20 centuries has made a concerted effort to clean up Jesus' reputation. Week after week, we invite him to come and hang out with us. Because we're not those people. They're the good people. And, you know, if he hangs out with us, it will improve his reputation considerably. The only problem is you still have to deal with the Bible and the kind of people he preferred to associate with. Over the centuries, we've had a number of images of what the church might be, what this collection of people that we call the church might be seen as. During some periods, it's seen as a fortress or a castle, or in our time, we might say a gated community, a place where the pure gather. Those who are chosen gather there, and if you are fortunate enough, you get the entry code. And once you get the entry code, there are all kinds of rules and regulations you have to follow if you are going to stay in the community, because you see, it's a community of the pure. And if you're just not pure enough, sorry. Then there are those, especially during the Crusades, who saw the church as an army, the church militant, the church who would violently defend and impose the teachings of Jesus Christ. Oh, how'd that work out for us? On the other hand, there were those nonviolent armies of the civil rights movement that saw the same image of the church, fighting injustice, except with different weapons. Weapons of the Spirit. A very popular image of church in our time is the church as a successful business model. You attract lots and lots of people, you make lots and lots of money, and you are successful, you're prosperous, and you know, you follow Jesus, you get successful and you get prosperous. Very popular. That's not how Jesus saw it. Jesus tells us how he saw it. They ask him, "Why do you hang out with all of these people you shouldn't be around? Don't you know that you are known by the company you keep? And you're not keeping very good company. You're a rabbi. You're a teacher. You should know better." And Jesus has the audacity to say not only that he will hang out with the tax collectors and sinners of various stripes, but that God sent him specifically to do that. Because you see, the righteous don't need what he has to offer. It's only the sinner. The well don't need a physician, he says. Only those who are sick. Jesus sees the church as a hospital for sick people. I'd like to rethink that whole term sinner for a minute. We tend to define sinner as a bad person or someone who does bad things. Seems to me that in his usage of the term, Jesus shifts the ground on us. A sinner in his term is not a bad person. It's a person who stands in need of what he has to offer. The needy. That's who the sinners are. Those who know that they need what Jesus has to offer. You see, we righteous don't think we need anything. We can do it ourselves. We've done it ourselves, right? And we look down on the needy. We look down on those who work three jobs and still can't get by, who aren't paid a living wage, who don't have health care, in spite of all the efforts to offer that, to those who can't read and write, to those who, because of the circumstances of their lives, wind up in a very different place than we have wound up. Same was true in Jesus' time. They looked down on the needy, the sick, the lepers, the poor. But that's who Jesus associated with, those who were in need of what he had to offer. And the problem of the righteous is we keep all that stuff hidden so we don't have to admit that we need what Jesus has to offer. Or we put up a good facade. We put on a good show. But we know what goes on underneath, don't we? And we're just as needy as the next person. In fact, if you start going out to 61st Avenue and you start reading to those kids who, without your help, may not learn to read on grade level, do you know what the primary predictor of someone winding up in prison is? That they read on grade level by third grade. That is a primary predictor. So you go out and you read to them. Otherwise, they might not learn that. They might forget what they learned during the year if they don't have this summer support. Or you go to death row. And you hear the stories of people whose life circumstances have been so different from yours that it makes you wonder, if I had been in those circumstances, would I be there too? You go into someone who's in hospice care, and you see the kind of wonderful care that's offered to them. And you see, they have the advantage of knowing that their mortality is very present. Their life will end sometime fairly soon. That's true for all of us. We just don't know when. But they need what those caregivers have to offer. Unapologetically. And when we do those things, we find that we have more in common with those folks than we ever imagined. There is more about us that is the same than that is different. We are among the needy. And given just a few circumstances, we could literally be among the needy that we too often look down on. It's one of the reasons we invite everybody to this meal. This meal's for everybody. Not for those who qualify. If you had to qualify, it wouldn't happen. If you had to qualify, I couldn't celebrate. It's for those who feel the need of the presence of Christ in their life. Because it's not my table. And it's not West End's table. And it's not United Methodist Church's table. It is Christ's table. And what is offered is the presence of the one who came to walk among and love those in need of what he had to offer. There's a story that I originally heard from a professor of mine in seminary. I've heard it said in other places since that time. told it a couple of weeks ago in our continuing summer Sunday school class and thought I would share it with you all in the larger congregation. My professor, Paul Hessert, had started out studying electrical engineering. That was his undergraduate degree. And somehow God got involved. And so he went to seminary and he went on to graduate school. He got his PhD at Edinburgh at a time when it was after World War II, and it was a time when many of the buildings were not heated. And you know those fashionable gloves that don't have any fingers in them? Well, they cut the fingers out of their gloves on their writing hand so they could take notes. It was so cold in the library. Paul always had a kind of love-hate relationship with academia. He was a good teacher. He was a demanding teacher. But after a while, he left to go serve churches because he felt like this is where God was most active in the world. He told us that when he was at Edinburgh, at St. Giles Church, they were serving communion, and in good Scots Presbyterian fashion, they were passing it up and down the aisles. And one of the stewards, one of the servers, came to the end of an aisle and handed it to the gentleman sitting there, and the gentleman just lowered his head and passed it on without taking the elements, without receiving them. And so when the elements had passed down and back, the steward came back to him. And he said, "It's for those that don't feel worthy." It is. It's for us, the needy. We're going to sing one of my favorite hymns in just a few minutes. Before we go home, we are going to sing, "Come Ye Sinners Poor and Needy." What a great first line. How can you look down on the needy when we have just been invited in that way, we who are poor and needy? "Come, you weary, heavy laden, lost and ruined by the fall. If you tarry till you're better, you will never come at all." So don't tarry, you poor and needy. Jesus has exactly what we need because he came for folks like us. Not for the righteous, but for the needy. That's our invitation, and the invitation is open to all. Thanks be to God.